I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you'll hear a clip from Press TV, an Iranian news outlet broadcast in English from Tehran, discussing the U.S. and Israel's threats on Iran. And that will be followed by a short clip from CNN about a U.S. drone that was caught flying over Iran. And then I'll end the show with a song about 9/11 that I was given at Occupy Wall Street and Occupy Building 7 this past November. 9/11 was the state crime against democracy that has been used to justify the endless war on terror. These wars are all connected, and it looks like Iran is next. David Ray Griffin has a new book out called 9/11 10 Years Later, When State Crimes Against Democracy Succeed. In it, he states, the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks is also the 10th anniversary of the new onslaught of the Christian and Jewish West against the Muslim world, an onslaught that now includes not only the U.S.-NATO attacks on Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya, but also support for Israel's 2006 war on Lebanon, Hezbollah, and its continued oppression of Palestine, along with U.S. provocations in Iran, Yemen, and Syria. How can anyone think that 9/11 is ancient history which no longer matters? And on the American Free Press website, an article posted on December 9, 2011, called Seven Nations on Neocon Hit List by James P. Tucker Jr. states, some 10 years before the September 11, 2000 attacks on New York and Washington, D.C., top neoconservatives in the Pentagon orchestrated a major policy coup to start wars with multiple Middle Eastern countries and secure total domination of the Middle East in order to take their oil. That's according to a top former U.S. military officer. In a speech in San Francisco, General Wesley Clark recounted a memo drafted by former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld's office in the wake of 9/11 that was brought to his attention by a top Pentagon official. The neocons' plot, he was told, was to attack and destroy the governments in seven countries in 5 years. We're going to start with Iraq, and then we're going to move to Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. Clark said the neocons wanted us to destabilize the Middle East, turn it upside down, make it under our control. While 9/11 provided an excuse for broadening the wars, neocons were plotting a decade earlier for regime changes across the Middle East. And David Swanson supports this idea in an article he wrote in the UK Guardian in April of 2001. I'm going to read you part of it right now. It says, the agenda fit perfectly with the plans of Washington's insiders, such as those who famously spelled out their intentions in the reports of the think tank called the Project for the New American Century. But taking over Libya still makes perfect sense in the neoconservative worldview. The Libyan government controls more of its oil than any other nation on Earth, and it is the type of oil that Europe finds easiest to refine. Libya also controls its own finances, leading American author Ellen Brown to point out an interesting fact about those seven countries named by Clark. She says, quote, what do these seven countries have in common? In the context of banking, one that sticks out is that none of them is listed among the 56 member banks of the Bank for International Settlements, BIS. That evidently puts them outside the long regulatory arm of the central banker's central bank in Switzerland. So now with that as a little background information, let's listen to the Press TV clip.
When Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu insisted that Israel should make the right decision at the right moment, even when allies object, the media started buzzing about how serious the threats against Iran really are. Stay with News Analysis for more.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he has the right and duty to take what he calls drastic measures to protect Israel's security. Netanyahu also referred to former Israeli Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion's declaration of Israel's creation in the face of opposition from many sides. Israeli media have described Netanyahu's remarks a veiled threat against Iran over Tehran's nuclear energy program. Israeli officials have been stepping up their anti-Iran rhetoric in recent months. Last month, Israeli President Shimon Peres said an attack on Iran is highly likely. Israeli media outlets said Netanyahu and the Israeli Minister of Military Affairs Ehud Barak are trying to convince cabinet members to support a war on Iran. However, not all Israelis agree to a war. Among others, Israel's former spy chief Meir Dagan has said an attack on Iran would be a foolish move that would have an unknown outcome. Tel Aviv has also been warned against attacking Iran by its staunchest ally, the U.S. U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta has said any attack on Iran will have unintended consequences. Some American politicians, among them Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul, have criticized Washington's all-out support for Tel Aviv.
Israel has 200, 300 nuclear missiles, and they can take care of themselves. Why should we commit? We don't even have a treaty with Israel. Why do we have this automatic commitment that we're going to send our kids and send our money endlessly to Israel?
Iran has dismissed Israel's recent threats against the country and said it will respond strongly to any foreign aggression against its soil.
Well, joining me now live from Beirut is judicial affairs expert Mr. Omar Nashabi. Thank you so much for being with us there. And also political commentator Mr. Mark Dankoff joining us live from San Antonio. Thank you very much, Mark. And a former CIA officer Philip Giraldo, who's joining us on the line from Washington. Thank you, gentlemen, for being on this edition of News Analysis. I'll start my first question with Mark Dankoff in San Antonio. Mark, Israel has been, as you know, ratcheting up its war rhetoric against Iran in the past few months. What do you make of Netanyahu's recently claimed history lesson? What's behind Israel's rhetoric, do you think, and what is it trying to achieve?
I think the answer to that is to be found in a couple of essays that are currently on the internet. M.J. Rosenberg has a piece for the so-called political correctness site that deals with the American Enterprise Institute admitting that Israel's increasingly militant attitude toward Iran has little, if anything, to do with Iran's alleged nuclear program and its alleged nuclear weaponized program. The other essay is that of Mahdi Darius Nazemroya, which can be found at Intifada Palestine and also Global Research, dealing, and the title of that piece is Iran and the Strategic Encirclement of Syria and Lebanon. Israel basically wants to maintain hegemony in the region as the leading power and the only power in that region when it comes to ultimate military strength. And it's relying, of course, upon the United States and Britain principally to continue backing it in virtually anything that it does. This is absolutely disastrous for the region, of course, and will be similarly disastrous for the United States and for Great Britain and for Europe if we're pulled into what it is that Netanyahu wants to do.
Right. Ms. Omar Nashabi, speaking about the consequences of a possible military attack, well, we know that Leon Panetta in the U.S. has been saying that Israel is becoming increasingly isolated, and he's been warning seriously against any kind of military attack on Iran. So can Israel and the U.S., do you think, afford anything like war, given, of course, the situation of the revolution is also raging in the Arab world?
Well, yes, no doubt that the any attack on Iran will create huge circumstances. I mean, this is a matter that will have a detrimental effects on the economic level and on the military level. I don't think that the Israelis will have the support from their Western allies to launch such a war. They are raising the level and the tone in their speeches, in their public declarations, in order to actually put more political pressure for additional sanctions on Iran in the United Nations. However, I don't think they will engage in such a war. And I think it's very indicative that the chief of intelligence in Israel, in occupied Palestine, that is, Meir Dagan, he expressed clearly that he is against such an operation because he knows that this is going to create a situation that is very difficult to deal with inside occupied Palestine and in the whole region, and it will threaten American interests in the region and also Western interests in general. And let's talk more in terms of specifics when it comes to military. Briefly, it's about the in 2006 there was an interesting episode of clashes between the Israelis, and the Israelis aggressed Lebanon, and the resistance in Lebanon that is supported by Iran was able to actually hit targets deep inside Israel, and this capacity has become more sophisticated today since 2006. The capacity of Iran when it comes to military warfare has also improved tremendously. So on the military level, any attack on Iran will create an insecure Israel and will actually lead to serious consequences.
Right.
Now, on the economic level, I think the consequences are even bigger. Because this will create a regional instability, and the regional instability will make it difficult for the Western countries and other industrial powers to get the oil, and it will the prices of oil will increase, and this is I don't think it fits the situation for China or for Russia. And
right,
I think
Mr. Nashabi, I'll just stop you there if I may. Because I want to bring in Mr. Philip Giraldi on this as well, speaking about the consequences of the war. Mr. Nashabi there speaking not just about the security situation, but also the economic consequences that it would bring. Now, Mr. Giraldi, do you think now there is a strong, however, difference of opinion between Israel and the U.S. about this question of a possible attack on Iran? Because today a lot was said about Mr. Netanyahu's comments when he said we have to make the right decision even if our allies are objecting to it. Do you think that the two sides are now adopting very different approaches and do not agree on this point?
Well, that question kind of depends on how you define the two sides. I believe very much that a lot of these statements being made by the Israelis are being made deliberately targeted towards the Western and specifically the American audience. And I think what they're trying to do is condition that audience, the American public and the American opinion makers, to be supportive of a military action against Iran if that were ever to take place. I believe that the White House definitely does not want the United States to get involved in any war against Iran, but it cannot openly say so because too many leading politicians in the United States, the Republican candidates with the exception of Ron Paul, for example, are all advocating in one way or another a military option against Iran. And this is very much true in Congress, and it's very much true in the media. So as I say, I think that a lot of the statements from coming out of Israel are an attempt to condition the public in the United States and elsewhere to support this kind of policy. My real fear is that even though Israel knows deep down that starting a war with Iran is not a good idea, we are approaching a situation with these threats and the intimidation that's going on where some kind of incident or accident could lead to an armed exchange between Iran and Israel that would draw the United States in.
Right. You referred there to the comments made by presidential hopeful Ron Paul. I'd just like to ask our viewers to take a listen now to what Ron Paul has said about the U.S. and Israel before we continue with this discussion.
Israel has 200, 300 nuclear missiles, and they can take care of themselves. Why should we commit? We don't even have a treaty with Israel. Why do we have this automatic commitment that we're going to send our kids and send our money endlessly to Israel?
U.S. presidential hopeful Ron Paul speaking there. Now, I'd like to put this next question to Mark Dankoff. Mark, let's look at the relationship now between the U.S. and Israel, specifically when it comes to the issue of the attack and the rhetoric on Iran. Now, first of all, would you agree that Washington is actually having the same stance of Israel, but rather it doesn't want to make it public, it doesn't want to be supporting that publicly? And also, with things like that have been said by Ron Paul, why should the U.S. even team up with Israel?
Well, that's exactly right. I would argue, and I suspect that some of our other guests would argue, that it is not in the American national interest to be supporting Israel at all. The fact of the matter is that when you look at what they're doing in Iran, it's not an accident that the Washington Post reported just a few days ago that there has been a fivefold increase in unexplained bomb blasts in Iran just in the last year or the last 2 years. This involves military installations, oil and natural gas sites, and so forth and so on. It becomes very clear, especially when we understand the relationship between the Israeli Mossad and the CIA on the one hand, and the Mujahideen-e-Khalq and the Kurdistani PJAK organization and the Jundallah organization operating out of Pakistan in conjunction with the MEK, that there is really a full-fledged undercover war going on against Iran right now in terms of these bomb blasts, in terms of the MEK's assassination of these three Iranian nuclear scientists, presumably at the behest of the Israeli Mossad, our continued violation of Iranian airspace with surveillance drones, not to mention all of these economic sanctions, including ones that are now beginning to target Iran's central bank. So the war has actually started. It's just a question of when the wider shooting war begins. And like Dr. Giraldi, I believe that Netanyahu is fully capable of arranging a false flag incident, be that in Israel, be that in Iran, be that in the Persian Gulf, be that in Europe or the United States, that can be pinned on Iran falsely, and then will then justify a further escalation in American, Israeli, and British aggression against the Iranian regime. This is a terrifying time, frankly, and in conjunction with the economic problems in the West, it suggests that Benjamin Netanyahu may simply drag Americans by the nose into something that is not in their national interest. Because, again, the power of the Jewish lobby in the United States is unquestioned. If you follow the money trail into these American congressional races, if you look at the amount of Jewish influence that exists in the American news media and in the American educational system, it's clear what's happening here. And I'm afraid the United States is somehow tragically going to become more involved.
Well, something interesting that Mark raised there. Mr. Nashabi, I'd like to put that question to you. He's saying that the war has already started. And, of course, a lot has been said as well about a covert war with Israel and the United States involved, already starting on Iran, including a psychological warfare on Iran's nuclear program, including efforts to create a campaign of assassinations, cyber war, as well as a campaign of sabotage. Well, do you think, however, that this is something that will lead up to some kind of airstrike or military attack, or is the war going to stay at this stage because the U.S. and Israel cannot afford to take it into another level?
Well, let's take a look at the variables. First, I just want to say that I agree fully with your guest from San Antonio when it comes to the Israeli lobby and how powerful it is in the United States. And all these speeches are really part of the election campaigns, because you know how influential the Israeli lobby in Israel is and how the effect it can have on the elections. And we've seen that before with Mr. Obama, before he was elected, when he had a long speech at the AIPAC, and also Mrs. Clinton, same thing. Now, I just want to point to two examples to add something to what has been said so far. There is a, you know, let's just not forget that the Americans are just withdrawing from Iraq, and they just suffered a lot in Iraq. So many American boys were actually killed in Iraq. Of course, the American occupation of Iraq was really detrimental also to the American economy. It was, by all standards, it wasn't a successful campaign. And I think, therefore, the time frame is too short. I don't think the Americans would engage in another war against Iran that has a vaster territory, that has more power, that has a solid regime, that has the support of great powers such as, okay, yes, the support is not absolute. There is no absolute support in politics, but there are some common interests with China and Russia that I think this time it's going to be far more difficult to engage in an attack on Iran than when this is a total different situation than when they invaded Iraq. So this is also one of the difficulties. And I want to bring back also 2006 and the Israeli attack on Lebanon and the failure of the intelligence. This is an intelligence gap that is very important. And I'm afraid, yes, the war of intelligence is ongoing between Iran and the Israelis and the Americans and also other Western intelligence. It's an ongoing war, yet there are some serious weaknesses when it comes to the most powerful intelligence apparatus in the region, and that is the supposedly the Israeli intelligence apparatus. And this weakness was very clear in Lebanon in 2006, and today we have, and also in Iraq And I think also in Iran during the past strikes where the Western powers tried to interfere in Iranian internal affairs and their attempts to actually change the regime from within Iran have failed altogether, although they had built hopes on that based on false intelligence reports.
Right. Let me just bring Mr. Giraldi here, if I may, so we don't run out of time. Mr. Giraldi, do you think then that for the United States, the option of a military attack is simply out of the question?
Well, the option of a military attack is out of the question if it is the United States that were initiating it. I don't believe that the White House has any interest in starting another war. But as I said before, and Mark Danforth, I think, reinforced, the issue of Israel starting an incident or starting a war is a very serious one. Because.
But what about the consequences for Israel, Mr. Giraldi? Would Israel afford to do that?
Well, Israel would do it on the assumption that the United States would get involved quickly. And I think that's a valid assumption, and that's why you're seeing all of these statements from Israeli leaders saying that Iran is an imminent threat, we have to do something about it. These statements come every week, and they're coming to convince the American public and the Western public that a war is probably an option that should be looked at. So if Israel were to start it, the media and Congress in the United States would immediately jump on the bandwagon and demand from the White House that the U.S. get involved. I'm convinced of that.
So you're saying, Mr. Giraldi, that the United States would go for that move if it rather understands that Israel has made that decision, that despite all of the consequences that it may have for the United States itself, that it would approve of that move and would get itself involved?
I believe it would get involved, and I cannot see any scenario in which it would not get involved, because the media in the United States would immediately be screaming that our poor little ally Israel is doing the job of attacking the Iranian weapons program, and we have to help them. And Congress would second that call. I cannot see how it would go any other way.
Well, Mark Dankoff, I'd like to put this question to you now, and that's the question of Israel's position in the Middle East. Now, there's been a lot of concern about Israel's nuclear weapons, for instance, and WMD. Ron Paul has been raising that concern also, even for the people in the United States. Now, talking about the nuclear stockpiles of Israel, do you think that this alliance between the U.S. and Israel is starting to turn into a liability rather than an asset for the United States, at least when the people look at it?
This relationship is a liability for the United States in every conceivable way and always has been. It's a liability politically in terms of our standing in the world, not to mention in the Middle East and in Central Asia. It's an absolute economic liability when you look at the billions of dollars that get siphoned out of this country for the Zionist enterprise. It's clearly a liability in terms of the fact that the project for the New American Century crowd and their clean break document of 1996, the so-called strategy for securing the realm, that ideology, which was Israeli-inspired and Israeli-driven, has been behind, totally behind, what the United States has now done in both Iraq and in Afghanistan militarily on a surrogate basis. The fact of the matter is that Israel is the tail that wags the American dog. The Zionist-occupied territory that Pat Buchanan has termed the American Congress correctly will continue to be led by Netanyahu, by the congressional nose. He will, if he starts a war with Iran, drag the United States into it because of that dynamic. And it's a great tragedy. And don't forget, we're in an American presidential election year. If the Israelis cannot get what they want out of Barack Obama, they certainly will get what they want out of either Mitt Romney or Newt Gingrich or whatever Israeli-driven neoconservative ends up with the Republican nomination, and Obama knows it.
Right. We're running out of time. I'd like to give the next 2 minutes or so to Mr. Omar Nashabi before ending the show. Now, Mr. Nashabi, speaking of what type of excuses can be now laid on Iran for a possible threat of a military attack, we've been hearing a lot about Iran's nuclear program and the supposed danger that Iran's nuclear program poses. Whereas, of course, Iran has not been proven to be developing nuclear weapons. It's not planning a war, for instance, on the United States or any other nation. So what would be the reason for waging war against Iran?
Yeah, well, perhaps the support of Iran, and there has been a lot of information in the media, support of Iran of the Assad regime and the involvement of Iranian guards inside Syria in actually killing the demonstrators, as was reported in some media outlets that are pro-Western media outlets. Now, I think that any threat of Iran and any attack on Iran is a violation of international law. It's a violation of UN Charter. This goes without saying. Yet, I wish at the end of this program to bring in, this is a holy night in Tehran and a holy night in Beirut. And in Tehran, there is an Islamic revolution that has an ideological direction. And the resistance in Lebanon against Israel also has an ideological religious principle that it's working on. And if this is a violation, I mean, the threatening, continuous threats on Tehran and on Beirut from these Western powers, and especially from Israel and the allies of Israel in the West, will actually lead to a reaction that I think it would be useful for all the Western commentators and analysts to review the history of this particular day and tomorrow to actually know that this has a very profound meaning.
Right.
And the people are resolute to resist any aggression, especially at this time when they are being violated and their rights are being taken away from them.
Thank you very much. Judicial Affairs expert Mr. Omar Nashabi joining us there live from Beirut. I'd also like to thank political commentator Mark Dankoff joining us live from San Antonio and former CIA officer Mr. Philip Giraldi on the line from Washington. Thank you so much for staying with us. From me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team here in Tehran.
And now here's a short interview between Aaron Burnett of CNN and the Iranian ambassador discussing the U.S. drone captured by the Iranians, showing that U.S. aggression has already begun.
Ambassador, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, let me ask you what happened. We saw the pictures of the drone on Iranian state television today. Did Iranian authorities shoot the drone down?
They did not shoot the drone down. Actually, they brought it down by their own ways and means that they know, and I'm not in the position to discuss the technicality of the act, but it was brought down somewhere in about 150 miles or 250 kilometers deep into Iranian territory in the province of Khorasan, which I'm coming from that area as well, in the northern region of the city of Tabas, that you may be familiar with.
Yes, and so you're saying you didn't shoot it down, but your technology was able to bring it down. Are the electronics intact on the drone?
I do not know the details, and even if I know, I am not in the position to discuss those details.
If the drone is intact, as it appears from the pictures on Iranian television, with the electronics, would you return it to the United States, or what would be your plans to do with it?
This is the decision that should be made by the Iranian officials to do to what to do with the plane.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ambassador Kazayi. Appreciate your taking the time tonight,
thank
sir.
Thank you, Irene. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And now I'm going to end the show today with the song Still Asking Why by Sharon Abreu. And here it is.
Questions. Towers fell from the sky. So many lives lost and broken. And we're still asking why. We were told how it happened. Science shows that's a lie. So here we are 10 years later. And we're still it's truth that we dread. The war machine gushes as our country runs dry, and the land of the brave is still afraid to ask why. while innocents die. From the bombs we are dropping, and we do not know why. So much evidence vanished in the blink of an eye. So many unanswered questions, and we're still asking why.